You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Sterling! England breakthrough! Arnautovic! And the goalkeeper! And that really does wrap it up.
Ake sent it across. Dumfries with the header! And finally, Denzel Dumfries has his first international goal!
There were so many stories on day three at Euro 2020.
Yes, a thrilling late win for the Netherlands. England and Austria are also loving life after victories.
Three games to review and three games to preview. Thiago helps us look ahead to Monday's huge match between Spain and Sweden.
We also head around the team cams from St. Petersburg to Glasgow. We've got you covered at UEFA Euro 2020.
Okay, welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm with my regular co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Yeah, what a day that was, Rob.
Not bad at all. And also with us is our reporter Lindsay Hooper, who's been out with the England fans in the fan zones today. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me back on. What an evening for Dumfries, hey?
Absolutely sensational. Much like Valt Veghorst, you're our late call-up to help save the show today, Lindsay. So thank you very much for joining us. Chris, there's been so much great drama over the course of the last few hours at Euro 2020, and some notable records too.
Yeah, I think I've counted five, so I'll get through them. Jude Bellingham, the youngest ever player at a Euro, 17 years and 349 days.
So that's not just England.
No,
that's
ever right. at a Euro in this tournament. Almost 20 years older than Jude Bellingham is Goran Pandev, who scored for North Macedonia, the second oldest goalscorer ever, at 37 years and 321 days. Austria got their first ever Euro win.
That's unbelievable, isn't
it? Yep. They have come close in the past, but not quite over the line. That happened. Michael Gregorich helped them with a goal. That was the 700th goal in Euro history, the first way back in 1960. And England won their opening match of a Euro for the first time ever as well. So very much a day of firsts.
I might have another one for you
as
well. You can add to your records.
Yeah.
Off the back of that result, Ukraine losing, the sixth consecutive defeat in Euro finals for them. That equals a record set by Yugoslavia from 1968 to 1984.
And it was interesting watching them at full time.
Yes.
They sunk to their knees, the players. They thought they had done it. They'd completed the comeback.
Yeah.
Absolutely devastating for them in the end.
Yeah, Alexander Zinchenko was walking around in Amsterdam just shaking his head. Andrei Shevchenko, who's seen everything in his career, walked onto the pitch, couldn't believe it. They worked so hard. They thought they'd got an incredible point. And then to lose like that, that is going to take some getting over. Of course, not over yet, as we say. Remember, the four best third place teams go through and Ukraine will come again. But that really looked like it hurt. Whereas the Dutch, absolutely delighted.
And we will get on to that game very shortly. Lindsay, in that game and throughout the three games we've seen on Sunday, some cracking goals too.
There have been some brilliant ones, and I think you can't go far away from that Yarmolenko strike that we saw in this match, the last one of the day. But there's been some great headers as well. I'm a big fan of headers.
Mm. Yeah, there's been some absolute belters throughout the course of the competition so far. There is lots of football to get to throughout the course of the show. We also wanted to give everyone an update on Christian Eriksen after his medical emergency during Saturday's Denmark-Finland match. Chris, what is the latest?
Well, the news remains positive. The Danish Football Association confirmed earlier he remains in a stable condition in hospital and is undergoing further examination, Rob. We've also seen the wider footballing family again unite today, which has been really lovely to see. There have been too many messages of support to read them, but I've picked out just a few to try and give everyone a flavour of the unity and the respect being shown to Christian Eriksen, such a popular footballer, of course. Before the start of their training session in Seville, the Sweden players and management lined up behind a banner bearing the message, "Keep fighting, Christian." Stefan Leiner paid tribute to him after a fantastic goal in his goal celebration for Austria, held up a shirt which simply said, "Stay strong." And so did Son Heung-min on the other side of the world for South Korea after he scored in a FIFA World Cup qualifier. Of course, Son, a teammate of Christian Eriksen at Tottenham. And of course, once again, we wish Christian Eriksen a full safe and speedy recovery.
Okay, if you want to get in touch with the show as well, use the hashtag #EuroShow. We're asking you, after some brilliant goals early in the competition, who are the three best strikers at Euro 2020? Now, that is not easy. We've had loads of you getting in touch. This is from Margot, who goes for Kane, Lukaku and Karim Benzema. Tidal says Lewandowski, Kane and Lukaku. And Tibu goes Lukaku. So keep your suggestions coming in. Chris, do you want to have a pop of this? Three best strikers at the competition. That's not easy.
It's not. Also, as well, my brain is going to the strikers that have already played. But, of course, we haven't yet seen Benzema and Mbappe and Griezmann and Müller. Lukaku, Kane and Lewandowski.
Okay.
I'm going there. I'm going real out-and-out goal scorers.
Lindsay, yeah, has Chris missed anyone off there for you? Is there someone who should be in the top three who he didn't mention?
Yeah, you know, he hasn't mentioned Mbappe. I think the third space is up for grabs. I think Kane and Lewandowski are the two best strikers in world football. And I think you've got to put in one more. Could it be Lukaku? Could it be Mbappe? Immobile as well, who's done brilliantly for Italy. There are plenty of contenders for that third spot.
We want your thoughts as well. Use the hashtag #EuroShow on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. But let's start with our review of Sunday's action and that amazing match in Group C in the evening as the Netherlands beat Ukraine in a five-goal thriller.
Now Dumfries. That's an excellent delivery in towards Memphis Depay. And finally, the breakthrough comes from the captain, Jorginho Wijnaldum. And the Netherlands have the goal that their play deserves. Here come the Netherlands once more as Dumfries tries to force his way through. And the shot ends up going in and Van Beekhorst makes it two. It takes a deflection on the way. A chance to shoot here for Andriy Yarmolenko, who scores an outstanding goal for Ukraine. Malinovsky puts it in. Oh, it's 2-2. Yaremchuk is there. And suddenly, Ukraine are level. Ake sends it across. Dumfries with the header. His first international goal.
So that made it 3-2 with 5 minutes to go, and the Oranje, playing essentially a home game of the tournament in Amsterdam, managed to hold on for the win. Of course, it was the Netherlands' return to a major finals for the first time since 2014. This, by the way, is maybe my favourite stat, and there's quite a few going around the Dutch today. The goal by Genie Wijnaldum is their first goal at a major finals in 2,528 days when Wijnaldum...
Yes.
Scored in the third, fourth place playoff at the FIFA World Cup against Brazil, which does feel like a long time ago. And that was a team that was playing with three central defenders, as they did on Sunday night. Chris, your reaction to a brilliant game at the Johan Cruyff Arena?
It really felt like the tournament caught fire in a way. We've seen some brilliant matches today and we've seen some fine goals already in Italy and Belgium's performances. But there was something about a really late winner in a really gripping match like that you think, OK, wow, Euro 2020 is really here. The celebrations in the stands were brilliant. And I think for Frank de Boer, it was a huge win. You know, you could see the relief on his face because the Netherlands played extremely well and we're in a two-goal lead, we're cruising. That is why this sport is so good, because suddenly the goal from Yarmolenko you heard there was probably the goal of the tournament
so far. Best one.
And then in that moment, the whole complexion of the game changes. Ukraine score again. Fantastic ball in. Super header from a set piece. And at that stage, you're thinking, they might go and win this. And then all of a sudden, it swings again. And Denzel Dumfries, who had numerous chances to score from right wing back, finally popped up with the winner. And it was a fantastic game. And it sets Netherlands up very nicely. And actually, as we'll come on to shortly, it sets this group up very, very nicely as well.
Lindsay, I think we didn't quite know what we were going to expect from the Netherlands. There's been a lot of talk about the fact they're not playing 4-3-3 at this tournament, but they came out quite crazy, quite flying, quite attacking in those opening moments.
They did. For any of us with questions, they answered them pretty quick, didn't they? 7 shots in the opening 10 minutes. They definitely told us what they were going to do. And I thought, overall, this game, it could have had more goals. When you look at the chances that were created, the fact that it's 3-2 overall isn't a shock. I mean, it could have even been, you know, 5-3 or something. It was a ridiculous game. And the game belongs to Dumfries overall. You know, his first international goal, but he also assisted the two goals. He scores the winner It's his day three, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And what is interesting is that there was a lot of talk in the Netherlands, not just this week, over the last month or so, about Frank de Boer playing five at the back, not playing 4-3-3 the Dutch way. Well, Denzel Dumfries was the right wing back because of that formation, and he's come up with a huge performance. So credit to Frank de Boer to sticking for what he clearly believed in. And also, this was a Dutch performance, remember, without Virgil van Dijk. We know he was out, but also without Matthijs de Ligt.
Wijnaldum actually did a little Virgil van Dijk tribute in his celebration as well, notifying, of course, the fact that he's injured for a major finals he would have been desperately keen to be involved on. Wijnaldum's role in this Dutch team is fascinating as well, Chris, because you see him breaking into the penalty area so often. I think of those seven shots that Lindsay was talking about, he had a few of them. And look at this record now for the Dutch national team. He's just signed for Paris Saint-Germain, of course. 15 goals in his last 26 appearances for the Dutch.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Liverpool in the UEFA Champions League, Gini Wijnaldum coming up with some very, very big goals. But I think the fact that the three midfielders that he picked today were Martin de Roon, Frenkie de Jong and Gini Wijnaldum. Now, he could have picked David Klaassen, who's since going back to Ajax, where this match was played in Amsterdam, has played as an 8, sometimes even as a 10, and Ryan Gravenberg, who also plays for Ajax. Now, they would have been more attacking options alongside Wijnaldum and de Jong, but the fact that neither of those played really meant the onus was on Wijnaldum to get forward and to help Weghorst and Memphis Depay, and he did his job fantastically well. And his celebration was great, wasn't it, when he scored? That felt like a proper pressure reliever for the Dutch. After 7 years away from the top table of international football, that moment felt big. This win feels very big, I think.
And Lindsay, doesn't it feel nice to see that colour back at a major finals? Doesn't it just really feel like seeing orange all round an arena is like a proper international tournament?
Oh, yes. Tang-tastic. It feels brilliant, doesn't it, to see that in the crowds. And even when the crowds are restricted, I mean, it's your go-to, isn't it? It catches your eye straight away. And talking about the defence here for the Netherlands, they were beaten by two outstanding goals. They were brilliant finishes, Yarmolenko and Yarmchuk's header. It was a fantastic header. And so you think, actually, with De Ligt back in the side, you know, they could be running away with this group, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could. I've missed another record, by the way. Martin Stekelenburg was picked in goal, 38 years and 264 days, the oldest ever player to play for the Netherlands at a World Cup or a European Championship, beating Edwin van der Sar, who set the previous record in 2008. So it was very much a red letter day for him and his country. Perfect start for the Dutch at home in Amsterdam, and that will only galvanise a nation who I think some of them were just wondering after some recent performances, OK, what are we going to get from our national team? Well, they answered a few questions. That late winner will have them very, very optimistic.
They did finish bottom of their group, Ukraine, at Euro 2016. Of course, a competition the Dutch didn't even actually qualify for. Do you think there'll be enough in that performance? And we were talking about how dejected they looked at full-time there, Chris. Will there be enough in that performance from a Ukraine point of view to give them hope going into their forthcoming matches in that section?
Yes, I think there will. And you mentioned 2016, where they didn't score, remember? That was their first goal. In fact, I saw a remarkable stat that they had had 72 consecutive shots without a goal at a Euro, stretching back to 2012 when, of course, they played at home and co-hosted it with Poland. And then they scored two in as many shots and in something like 250 seconds. So, yeah, I definitely did. I think you can see the individual quality that they have. And I think it'd be interesting to see if Yarmolenko were to start in their second game, but most definitely they'll look back and they'll be disappointed. You could see that as they walked off the pitch, because they played their part in a brilliant game. But Andrei Shevchenko, I am sure tomorrow, will be very quick to point out the positives, and they will come again when they face North Macedonia on Thursday, and, you know, win that game and they are right back in the reckoning.
Well, the other match in Group C had just the four goals. Stefan Leiner, Michael Gregoric and Marko Arnautovic were on target as Austria overcame a strong North Macedonia side to record their first ever Euro victory. Austria's captain and their star man, David Alaba, spoke to us pitchside after the match.
We wanted just to start with 3 points for our country, for Austria. 2016, the last Euro Cup, we didn't start well, and after the first game, we didn't find into the tournament. So this was very important to us that we win this first match, and yeah, so we're very grateful for that. We have a really good squad, and we have a squad with a lot of potential. So we could have seen it today, that two guys came in from the bench and scored, so that was very important for us.
Of course, it was a historic day for North Macedonia, their first ever appearance at Euro. And we'll get onto that shortly. While having just heard from David Alaba, who we know, of course, has joined Real Madrid this summer from Bayern, there's been so much discussion about his best position. I even saw him play in a 10 position at Euro 2016 for Austria. Quite ironic that his standout moment in the game comes from left back, doesn't it, to swing that ball in for the goal for 2-1.
What a cross. That has to be one of the crosses of the tournament, right? It was absolutely perfect. And yet, you know, this is going to be a debate which will rumble on for as long as Austria are in this competition. And perhaps, and I can imagine the coach saying, look, wherever he plays, he's going to make an impact. So perhaps it doesn't really matter where David Alaba keeps on popping up. And certainly you could see the passion that he displayed when Marko Arnautovic made the game safe. Also, I mean, talking of great goals, Lina's volley and the pass from Marcel Sabitzer to pick him out is a long one, is an accurate one, has a bit of fade on it. And Lina, who doesn't get many goals, had both feet off the ground to cushion the volley in from quite a tight angle with his right foot. That was a sensational goal to get things rolling in. What was, as you said, Rob, an incredibly exciting game in front of almost 10,000 fans in Bucharest.
I was really impressed with Austria here as well. And not only for the fact that they managed to stay in this game, tactically, like, let's give credit to the manager here, because it was Gregoritsch, wasn't it? And by the way, that was a 700th goal in Euro history that he scored. And Arnautovic, who'd both come off the bench. It was the substitutes that changed this game. Credit where it's due.
Yeah, Marko Arnautovic was coming into this game off the back of an injury problem, and Franco Foda, the head coach, had said it was too high a risk to start Arnautovic in the game. He was their top scorer in qualifying with 6, but he came on and buried his chance, had a wild celebration, which was interrupted by David Alaba as one point. But let's get on to North Macedonia here as well. It was their first ever appearance at a finals, and despite the fact they were beaten, Lindsay, you know, a special day for them in Bucharest.
Oh, hugely, hugely memorable for them in their history in terms of football. I thought that they really showed up well. Elmas is such an exciting player. And I was watching him intently because I also have him in my fantasy team. but yeah, I absolutely thought that they were together. They fought for each other. They showed that grit and determination. They're not going to be easy to roll over at all.
I actually think Goran Pandev's goal and his celebration is one of the moments of the tournament so far for me, that the passion, everything he has done for football in that nation, and he's the guy that scores their first goal.
Goran Pandev with the goal for North Macedonia as they were beaten by Austria in Group C. So Austria starting off with a win in that section along with the Dutch. Let's go to Group D now, and England won their opening game at a Euro for the first time in their history. Amazingly, they beat Croatia 1-0 at Wembley Stadium, and it was one of their veterans, in inverted commas, who shone in London.
Leeds United Calvin Phillips, Sterling! England break through, and Raheem Sterling is the man. Home joy at Wembley, from the outside, right through the middle, Raheem Sterling.
To be honest with you, I always said to myself, if I come here, growing up 2 minutes down the road, like I know I've got to score here, and it was a great feeling to actually do it. First game, we needed a win, and the most important thing is we stuck together at the end there. You've seen how difficult it is with the weather. And I thought the boys were brilliant and headed the ball when we needed to, cleared it when we needed to, and played some good football at times. It's early days and we just got to keep winning, have that win mentality and keep going forward.
I'm really happy that Raheem Sterling brought up his own Wembley connections. We heard about it in the preview podcast with us three previously about the tattoo that he's got of a boy looking up at Wembley Stadium. And look at that moment for him. It was a big call, Lindsay, obviously him starting. We did know he would be playing support of Harry Kane. But what did you make of his performance and the way that England set up for this one?
I thought he was fantastic. I thought he looked fresh. I thought he actually looked like one of the fresher England players in this performance. And Gareth Southgate was proven right. You know, the way that he makes runs at defences, he's always very positive. He draws players out. He creates space for other players behind. Harry Kane's always looking for him because we see Harry Kane dropping deeper all the time. And who's the player that's always ahead? It's Sterling when he's on the pitch. I think it was a good move putting him in. And I think he'll retain his place now because of that. And that's not to say that I think he'll get 90 minutes all the time. I think someone like Jack Grealish might come in, replace him after about the hour mark. But what Sterling can do is that job for quite a while. And as long as he can finish, he's going to offer something for this tournament. And without doing that, he still offers something. But I do think with the creative assets that are there in that England team, that Gareth Southgate is going to start rotating at some point. But what a way to get started.
Yeah, and I thought the intent from England inside the opening 10 minutes was fantastic. Phil Foden with his blonde silvery hair hit the post, was very, very unlucky that could easily have gone in. And you could see right from the off that sometimes England have slightly been slow starters, I think, in major international competitions. But Gareth Southgate's team were quite the opposite. And they could easily have had a couple of goals really before Croatia began to get a foothold in the match. And I thought it was very impressive. Mm. I thought not just the call to play Sterling, but we have to talk about Calvin Phillips now, who set up the goal, Lindsay. And I mean, I know that Leeds United fans in the English Premier League call him the Yorkshire Pirlo after, of course, the great Andrea Pirlo. But it was a real performance, and he was given a slightly different job, right? He was further forward than I think many people anticipated, and the assist for the winner was one of the passes of the game.
It was sublime, and he was the man of the match, and I don't think anyone expected that. And when we saw the team news and saw the England squad, I think Rice and Phillips being together, it sort of hinted at maybe being a little bit more defensive. And then when he got more advanced, it felt like a completely different move. And I don't think that was what Croatia were expecting either. He definitely disrupted. There were those niggly challenges he was getting in, just upsetting the flow for Croatia at times, which I think was crucial. And again, he will be a player that will be saying, right, boss, I want to be right in there doing it again. Worth saying here as well, and this is for England fans who are getting really, really excited right now because they managed to get this result. Croatia have lost to the eventual winners in three of their last four major tournaments.
There's the superstitious kind of stat.
I like that. Our producer was excited anyway. He's going to be even more excited after he hears that stat. But yeah, totally agree. I think it was a very impressive performance. And if you look at the game, Jordan Pickford, I can't remember a real save that he had to make. And I think that will please Gareth Southgate as much as the way they scored the winner, and of course the way they saw the game out, because 3 years ago in the FIFA World Cup semi-final, Croatia came back and they were the team that went through. So I think England will look back on today far more fondly than they did in that match a couple of years ago in Russia.
Trippier, of course, starting in left back, was a major call from Gareth Southgate. Five players made their Euro debuts, by the way, in that starting 11. And England, maybe this home advantage will be even bigger than they originally thought. They have won 16 of their last 17 home games. Also like this from Calvin Phillips, I think it was a great point that Lindsay made in terms of whether that was a defensive midfield setup. This is what Calvin Phillips said about his relationship with Declan Rice in midfield. He says, there's been a lot of talk of us fighting for one position, but I think we are playing really well when we play together. And it certainly did work out for them in the game. Lindsay, by the way, of course, you've been out with the fans today, of course, because we have fan parks in the host cities for Euro. And you've been getting their thoughts and getting their reactions to the football.
I have. I was at the Fan Zone in Trafalgar Square, which opened its doors for the first time today. It's going to be there for every single England match day. There's also a Fan Village at Potter's Field, which is near Tower Bridge. And yeah, just being there today, I mean, it was scorching, wasn't it? A lot of these socially distanced benches were put in front of the big screens, and they were in that thick sunlight. But there was no moving England Tottenham fans. They had their flags out. They were celebrating all those chances early on. And we should come back to that, I think, at some point, because maybe we need a bit of objectivity about them not actually taking some of those chances early on. But when they did, wow, there were ruptures. Lots of people afterwards saying that they think they should stick with the same 11 now. For the fans that I spoke to, they were thinking, yeah, don't make any changes for Scotland. I'm sure we'll discuss that as well. I spoke to a couple of very happy England fans. You'll hear from Ads in a moment, and this was Sophie.
Brilliant. It's like, this is such an organised event, and also, like, the scoreline really reflects that. Like, it's been so much fun.
What was your overall assessment of the way that England performed?
I actually think it was quite a strong performance, and although it's only 1-0, I feel like we could have had more. I think we'll win the group, and I hope we'll progress well.
Oh my gosh, a final would be amazing. I think if we get there, which is a possibility, I think we could go all the way. The squad right now is amazing. Southgate, I think, is amazing. And yeah, I mean, we could do it. You know, we could really do it.
Any final tweaks from you for Scotland in terms of personnel?
Yeah, I mean, I think hopefully Southgate would use the squad, which I think, which is what he's doing. You know, you got guys on the bench like Saka, Jadon Sancho, my guy Jordan Henderson, you know. To be honest with you, I'm just going to have faith with what he puts out there and just back the team, to be honest with you, whatever happens. And hopefully get a win against Scotland.
Hopefully so. Thanks so much.
Just one last thing I would like to say is I would like to say again thank you to the organisers and thank you to the London Ambulance Service, who I work for. And also, I wanted to say happy birthday to my beautiful daughter, Sienna.
Oh, lovely. I'm glad you got that in. Thank you.
Bless you.
Lindsay, it sounds like he had a lot of fun at the fan park. Actually, the way you asked that final question to Ads was like he was the manager. You said, any final tweaks for the next game? But he did answer it like that. A couple of quick ones. Did beer get thrown in the air? Because that was a big thing, obviously, during the FIFA World Cup in 2018.
A little bit, but people were hanging on to their fluids today.
Good. And did you get sunburnt?
I have a little bit across the nose slightly.
It was boiling today in London, wasn't it?
Oh,
it was absolutely
so
boiling.
So hot. There were slightly shaded areas around the perimeters, and I was trying to get in those as often as I could.
No, it was great to hear that, Lindsay, and great to hear people enjoying that in the fan parks. It feels like things are getting a little bit more normal. We absolutely love to hear it. Let's hear from England's manager, Gareth Southgate. Now, he spoke afterwards about his delight with the 15,000 fans at Wembley Stadium.
It feels great to have been able to send the fans home happy. In terms of the game, I was really pleased with the way we settled so quickly. Some young players, some inexperienced international players, big occasion, not only a tough opponent, but a big occasion, sweltering hot day. Every reason to potentially look nervous at the start, but they didn't. You know, with and without the ball, they were composed, carried out, you know, what we wanted to do in terms of pressing brilliantly. Yeah, although it was always going to be a game of few clear chances, I thought we looked the bigger threat throughout, really. And we also knew that the athleticism today in midfield was going to be so important. We had to get tight to their three midfield players, and Mason, Calvin and Declan did that really well, along with the wide players helping out and Harry taking up the right positions. So they did a lot of the job for the defence to limit the opportunities. And yeah, Calvin is a fabulous boy to work with, so unassuming, and I thought his performance was outstanding. The two passes in the first half in behind the defence were top level, and the contribution for the goal summed his day up.
Gareth Southgate there, the England manager. Šemi Vasalko, the Croatia defender, said afterwards, "We had our spells, but England were better." We heard Gareth Southgate's opinions there. Chris, how did England go about nullifying Croatia? Because in truth, I actually can't remember too many occasions within which Jordan Pickford was tested properly.
Yeah, and Zlatko Dalic, the Croatia coach, speaking after the game, said in attack we didn't show the quality that he wanted. And he did go on to credit the fact that he thought England played well, and that was the reason for that. They were unable to get the ball in areas where Luka Modric could then really start dissecting.
When he did something.
Yeah. And when he did, there were a few slightly nervous moments or a couple of balls into the box, which Jordan Pickford came. But because it was only 1-0, you thought, OK, it just takes a slight lapse in concentration. But in truth, England fully deserved the win. I think one real bright spot was the performance of Joško Gvardiol, who may not have started had it been for an injury elsewhere. Only 19, his full debut, his second international cap, and I thought against the quality of the England attack. Actually, he did very, very well. We know he's very good on the ball. He's just got a move from Dinamo Zagreb to RB Leipzig in the German Bundesliga for next season. And I think you saw just why he is so highly rated and so highly thought of. So that will be a positive that Croatia can take into their next game in Group D against Czech Republic. And that is now a very, very big match. Whatever happens when the Czech Republic face Scotland, for Croatia now, I think if you lose your first game, it's fine because of the fact that, you know, some of the third place teams go through. But you probably then need to get something from your second game.
We will preview, by the way, the other game in Group D, as Chris mentioned there, very shortly. Scotland versus the Czech Republic after 3 days of action. But we want to get into fantasy football a little bit here. And this is a good time as well to get into team news from the other camps around the competition. First of all, Lindsay, on your fantasy team, how is yours getting on right now?
I had Immobile, so that was a good start. It hasn't gone so well since. And if I can remind anyone listening about the substitutes that you can make, because I wasn't so aware of this, and
Lindsay,
and I think I've missed some opportunities today.
Well, you still have two more days within this match day to make your changes, and you can switch the captain's armband around. The one that's killing me, I had Donnarumma in goal, clean sheet, so you think, I won't take him out, I'll leave him in there. Mm-hmm. Lukas Radetzky was my backup goalkeeper, saved a penalty, clean sheet, and got 13
yes.
points just on the bench.
He was on my bench
yeah,
as well.
That's always the case, come on.
Yeah. And I had Dalot.
Who's injured.
He's injured.
Well, if you've been listening to yesterday's show, Lindsay, you'd have known not to put Matthias De Ligt into your side.
That's why we do this section.
This is why we do this section. Okay, Chris, let's go through it then, shall we? So Portugal are next in action against Hungary. That's their opening game, of course, at Euro. There is some team news from their camp.
Yeah, and some disappointing news. João Cancelo, the Manchester City fullback, has tested positive for COVID-19 and has actually been ruled out of the tournament, which is a really sad news for him. The Manchester United fullback Diogo Dalot, who was on loan at AC Milan last season and has just played at the under-21 European Championships, he takes his place in the squad. A very good guy to come in. He's a very, very good player, but João Cancelo would almost certainly have been one of Portugal's starters, and that is that's disappointing for him and for his country.
Same group, France take on Germany on Tuesday, probably the game of match day one.
Can't wait.
In truth, can't wait for that one. That French attack, a couple of question marks over him.
Yeah, so it's good news here. Karim Benzema is fit, suffered a dead leg in their final friendly and was forced off against Bulgaria. He's okay, he's now training fully. Antoine Griezmann also is fine after a slight calf problem. And actually the third member, Rob, of that, you know, ridiculous forward line, let's be honest, and Olivier Giroud, by the way, comes into this potentially. But the third member is Kylian Mbappe, and he was the man on press duty today. And if you want confidence, OK, he was asked about one of the finest individual displays we've ever seen in this competition. Michel Platini at Euro 1984. He scored 9 goals when France picked up the trophy for the first time, including back-to-back perfect hat-tricks, left foot, right foot header. It was an astonishing summer. Now, most players, I think, would laugh the question off or would bat it away. Kylian Mbappe, 9 goals is a lot, but records are made to be broken.
Oh, he's up for it. Okay.
He thinks he can do it anything, and he pretty much can. So that is the confidence that Kylian Mbappe is taking into that game against Germany.
And Timothy Castagne, injured for Belgium the other day, looks set to be out potentially for the tournament, but certainly for Thursday's game with Denmark after his injury the other day. OK, coming up, we'll look at Monday's games, including Spain's opener at the tournament against Sweden.
This is the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
OK, time to preview Monday's matches. Chris, what have we got coming up?
Well, 3 more games, which is brilliant for football lovers. Starts in Group D at Hampden, Scotland against the Czech Republic. And then in Group E, that, of course, is, by the way, the same section as England and Croatia are in. And then after that, Group E takes centre stage. Poland against Slovakia in St. Petersburg and Spain against Sweden. That's the final match of tomorrow. That is in Seville. And shortly after that match ends, of course, we will be on air once more on the Euro show.
As Chris mentioned there, Spain start their campaign against Sweden. We've been speaking to Liverpool midfielder Thiago, who believes it will be a bit of an advantage to be playing their opening match in Seville.
We talk about football and fans and they are crazy with the national team, and we are crazy also when we play there. I think it's for sure it's a benefit to play with our fans there, supporting us with our national anthem, crowded. Would be nice. Football now is different than before. Football now, all the teams, when a team is very prepared, it would be a tough game for us. It's like that. Football before was just, okay, put the 11 there and play football. Be aggressive or be tough, be that. Now all the teams are prepared, so football has changed and we are more prepared than before, for sure. We came here to win, 100%. We came here to win. We know it would be a tough way to the final, but in our mind is, okay, we came here to win. What do we have to do to win? First game, Sweden. Let's prepare this game. Let's be focused, be in shape, all of us. And then after this game, we have another, but first Sweden. Let's face this game. Let's play as hard and as best as we can. And then we think about the next game, but first Sweden.
I love hearing Thiago talk, Lindsay. He's such a great talker. And of course, Spain do have that home advantage.
They do. And there's a similarity here, isn't there, with England? Because Spain, just like England, are on home soil for the whole group phase. And I'd wondered for both of you how much of an advantage you think that might be.
Yeah, I think we've seen it already, haven't we? I think you can feel it. And maybe that was what helped spur the Dutch on in their game. We saw that with England with Wembley as well. It's a big occasion for the Spanish, Chris, because, of course, in recent years, international tournaments haven't been as good as they had been for them sort of, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, because they had that extraordinary high bar, I think. But they come into this, I think, quietly confident. And actually, we can hear more now from the Spanish camp because we spoke to the Spanish football expert and UEFA's reporter, Graham Hunter, a little earlier on. I asked him naturally, of course, about the weather in sunny Seville first off.
Well, if it's purely a weather report you're looking for, there's been a lot of humour given about everybody saying, well, what a shock. It's June, it's Seville, and it's 37 degrees. But I'll stray away from meteorology and say that La Cartuja, it's designed in such a way that the shadow encroaches very quickly. So I was fortunate enough to be asked to do the Sweden media work today. So interviewed Seb Larsson and Janne Andersson, which was, I mean, genuinely fascinating. And at that stage, all round the running track and the pitch, it was just blisteringly hot. And indeed, if you want to know about it, we talked to both Seb and to Janne about the idea of why were Sweden training at that hour of the day, which is just after 1:30. And by the time, even before Spain arrived late in the afternoon, a big chunk of the stadium was in shadow. And frankly, given how tired all the footballers are at this stage, even though they're jam-packed with ambition and adrenaline for the European Championships, the fact that there'll be shade for a good chunk of the game tomorrow, I think, is to the benefit of everybody.
Of course, Seville was not originally one of the host cities for Euro. That was sort of a relatively late switch. But are there any nuances to the kind of support that Spain will get from a Seville crowd compared to, say, other parts of Spain?
Well, you're right. I mean, I asked Jordi Alba about that. He said, listen, wherever we go, they fill stadiums and they cheer us and they get behind us. And he said it's vital that we give them football to be proud of, which is a very nice phrase. But it's also not true. I think for everybody listening to your show, to relativize what's going on, people talk about Spain having won three straight tournaments, the Euros in 2008, then the World Cup in 2010, and retaining the European Championship in 2012. But you both remember, in 2008, they were booed out of their own country, literally. They'd had a friendly against Chile, and they had the last friendly against the United States, and Joan Capdevila scored a goal. And they were jeered, and they were whistled, and they were booed, and they left the country in that instance to go to Austria and Switzerland, feeling a mixture of chagrin and a little bit of anger, but also motivation to kind of to show their own fans what they're made of. That isn't going on anymore. Again, everybody listening will know that the mere fact for fans to be able to come to a stadium now, for players to play in front of fans, Jordi Alba said, and to be honest with you, Seb Larsson was saying, we're dying to see a splash of blue and yellow, blue and gold all around the stadium because we've been restricted in both club and international games. And he says, it's a massive motivation. And they both talked about goosebumps when you walk out again. It's not that they've forgotten what fans were like, but they've missed it. So you asked about peculiarities. It won't only be people from Sevilla who come to the game, but down in Andalusia in general, they do have a massive reputation for being much more vociferous, much more demonstrative, very, very noisy. And certainly there are many Primera Division clubs in Andalusia, but the two in this city which is, of course, Real Betis and Sevilla, when those stadiums are full, it's massive. It's absolutely brilliant. I would contend there probably isn't a better atmosphere anywhere in Europe than when Sevilla sing their anthem at the beginning of the matches at the Nervión. So, yes, I think there will be a splash of Sevilla in La Cartuja, the Sevilla stadium, tomorrow. But I think there will also be people travelling. And I can tell you that while some of the Swedes will have come from their homeland, there are a huge amount of Swedes who live on the Costa del Sol and will simply drive or train up to this. And I'm still not completely sure what the maximum number that all the authorities will allow into the stadium, but I am absolutely sure it's going to be extremely noisy and a heck of a lot of fun.
You've absolutely got me ready for this match, Graham. Can I just ask, after all the well-documented things that have happened in the Spanish camp, is everything now OK, and are they now back to preparing for the match that they would have wanted to?
First of all, they made a really big deal of mentioning Sergio Busquets at all costs. We now know that Diego Llorente was a false positive. This evening, Jordi Alba said, look, we want to dedicate our performance and the match to Sergio Busquets. The good news about him is that he remains asymptomatic. He's training very hard in his own gym at home in Barcelona. And all being well, there's an expectation that he's back in Las Rosas training with the Spain squad somewhere in the early to middle part of this coming week. So that's good. Diego Llorente is in the squad. That's fine. We spoke to him yesterday. He was fascinating. He draws comparisons of ideas, of philosophy between Bielsa, under whom he's coached at Leeds, and Luis Enrique. Everybody's at pains to say they're not identical. But this daring high line, and Llorente was brilliant at talking about the risks are far outweighed by the benefits. And I prefer the risk of playing high, of knowing that my teammates will press with me, that we can press offside, and that if we use that to move the entire team up and we win for Spain, the ball higher up the pitch. He pointed out that that's a massive benefit to our strikers. So he was really interesting on that, and he's back, simple as that.
Thank you very much for joining us, and enjoy tomorrow's match in Sevilla against Sweden.
Enjoyed it, lads. Viva España.
Always great to hear from Graham Hunter, who I'm sure is excited about Scotland's return to major international football as well. He believes, and we did speak to him about this as well, that Aymeric Laporte will likely start as one of two central defenders. That's the big call here for Luis Enrique in Spain. Who will partner him? Will it be Eric Garcia and Pau Torres? Of course, there's no Sergio Busquets ill currently, and Jordi Alba will be captain for Sweden. They're only sweating on Albin Ekdal after he picked up a knock in training. The big selection for them there, with no Ibrahimovic at this tournament due to that knee injury. The main team misses out. Who partners Berg up front? Is it Isak with 17 goals this season for Real Sociedad in La Liga? Maybe he's the option. Or is it Robin Quaison of Mainz? In the same section, we'll get our first glimpse of Bayern striker Robert Lewandowski on Monday when Poland take on Slovakia. His head coach, Paulo Sousa, has been speaking how he can get the most out of their star striker.
We don't want him as a target man. We want him with players around him where he can combine and where he can interact, and he's not marked for two or three players and he will be alone. And with the other ones like Milik, Piontek, it's the level of our strikers, they are really good. For that, we need to feed them. This it was straight away my first idea, how we want to feed them. And we are working on that.
Paulo Sousa there will standing by for us in St. Petersburg, where the two sides will meet, is UEFA's Poland reporter Piotr Kosminski. Thank you very much for joining us, Piotr. What do you make of Poland's chances at Euro 2020?
It's a question mark if we speak about Poland, because Paulo Sousa was just appointed as a national team coach in January. So the main question in Poland is whether he has had enough time to prepare the team. It looks like a little bit race against the time. But of course, Polish people hope that this race will be won. And, you know, we think, Poland think that this game against Slovakia is crucial one, because 5 years ago in France, Poland won against Northern Ireland 1-0 and then reached the quarterfinal. Everybody in Poland hopes it will be the same in this case.
Piotr, how concerning are the injury issues at the moment? We know about Milik, striker out, Piontek, striker out, and there's been concerns about Jan Bednarek as well as other injuries. What's the latest from the camp?
Yeah, the latest from the camp is that Paulo Sousa admitted at press conference that all players which came to Russia are fit and ready. it would mean that Jan Bednarek is prepared. That's true, what you said, that the Polish doctors saved Bednarek in last practice sessions. He was, you know, working individually, because as you are right, with Poland suffered a lot, because to be frank, we lost Arkadiusz Milik, who was in great shape in Marseille, who changed the club to save his Euro participation. We lost Krzysztof Piątek. So we stayed with two or three strikers, but Poles are still happy that we stayed with the best striker in the world, as Poland is sure. So Robert Lewandowski. But coming back to your question, yeah, you know, or even not striker, but the best football player in the world. So we count on him a lot, because you can imagine, we speak about the player who is the most capped in national team history, 119 caps, and the most goals in national team history, 66 goals. Robert Lewandowski last season played much less games than in 10 last seasons. It's like 10 games less or something. So Poland hope that he will be more fresh with the same energy like usual, and that he will lead Poland to great things here.
Piotr, I knew you were going to speak about Robert Lewandowski, and I absolutely loved that passion. And of course, he had that injury at the end of the season, or near the end of the season for Bayern, which might just mean that, as you said, he is going to be fresher than ever. Can we speak about Paulo Sousa, who of course was a brilliant player for Portugal? What impact has he had since coming in, what, only 5 or 6 months ago?
Yeah, as I said, it's a kind of race against the time for him. But to be frank, the people in Poland were a little bit relieved when Zbigniew Boniek, president of Polish FA, announced in January that the Jerzy Brzęczek mission is over. From point of view, I would say it was okay, because Poland qualified to Eurofinals. The quality, the level of the game was not convincing, and many Polish fans didn't expect a lot from Jerzy Brzęczek team in the final tournament. When Zbigniew Boniek announced the change, the hope came back. Paulo Sousa changed a lot tactically, personally, so we in Poland are not sure how it's gonna work, because it's just 5 games, and you know, the people which are pessimistic say that he only won against Andorra, but the people who are optimistic in Poland, they say that he only lost against England. So still more questions than answers, and I think that tomorrow it will be a crucial day for him.
Piotr, of course, you speak to the players while on duty during UEFA Euro 2020. Amongst the players, is this a united group? Do they feel like a great collective, even though they do have, you know, 2 or 3, 4 truly standout players at both ends of the pitch?
The atmosphere is really good. I'm following the team since many days. I've been in Opalenica team base camp in Poland. And at press conference in Opalenica, Wojciech Szczęsny, who has huge experience with Poland, Arsenal, Juventus, and some other clubs. So Wojciech Szczęsny said, this is the best camp I took part in, because we have time to serious work, but we also have time to relax. And good example is Piotr Zieliński, you know, Napoli midfielder. We in Poland wait for his breakthrough in national team, because the people say that he's like Polish Brazilian, the most skillful player in national team, with technique which you cannot see in other Polish places, cases, but we wait for his explosion. And coming back to your question, during this practice camp in Opalenica, the first child of Piotr Zieliński was born, and Paulo Sousa let him go for some days, because he told him the family is the most important. So Zieliński came back to the team and scored a goal against Iceland, showing that he's, you know, 100% with the coach. So I think that Sousa, from atmosphere point of view, created a really united group. The people, the players say, we are united, we feel very good, we are prepared. And answering the questions about the last friendlies, because there were 2 draws against Russia and Iceland. But Krychowiak said today, we've been not preparing to friendlies, we've been preparing to the Euro, and on Monday we will show that we are 100% ready.
Cannot wait. And just finally, St. Petersburg, it's the second match in that fantastic Russian city. Of course, Russia were beaten by Belgium there. What's it like? Are there many Poland and Slovakian fans? Have they been able to get over there?
You know, they are coming, they are coming. We still have some time, but I was in the city. I mean, it's a kind of maybe not private thing, but I'm big James Bond fan. And I remember this octopus thing when Roger Moore was taking part in this auction when he was trying to buy Fabergé egg. And I had, you know, this opportunity today to go to museum, Fabergé Museum in St. Petersburg. It was really nice. So the city is like very vivid. We have a lot of fans everywhere. Somebody prefers to be in restaurant, somebody in museum, somebody close to the Neva, fantastic river. So we really feel that the Euro is coming. And this is what Krychowiak also said. We know that our moment is coming. We don't want this bitter feeling from Russia World Cup 2018 when we lost in the group, when we didn't qualify. So I can see excitement is growing. And I think that since the morning tomorrow, I will go to the stadium very early because I like to feel this passion around the stadium, the fans coming. So I can assure you that here in St. Petersburg, it's going to be hot.
Piotr, speaking to James Bond, you are our secret agent in St. Petersburg. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Yes, thank you very much too. As a secret agent, I was not able to tell you everything, but I hope that I helped you a little bit at least.
You did a great job. Piotr, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys. See you.
Brilliant stuff from Piotr, as always, and we'll be hearing through from him throughout the course of the group stage. Poland taking on Slovakia in their group opener in Russia. And Lindsay Hooper, Slovakia just worried about Marek Hamsik. What kind of condition is he in, their star player?
Yeah, Hamsik, a big concern. There's worrying times here because their captain has been struggling with a muscular problem. Now, this is a player that's been the standout player for Slovakia for the last decade at the 2010 World Cup, also at Euro 2016. Since 2016 as well, five different coaches have been in charge of Slovakia. A handful of the regulars, like including Skrtel, for instance, they've retired since 2016. So much hangs on Hamsik. He's got that distinctive mohawk, hasn't he, that no one will forget when they watch any tournament. And I just think it's crucial that he does play and that he's able to play to his full capabilities.
Yeah, he's had his injury since returning to Europe, so we'll wait and see if he can play in that Group E game. The other game, of course, comes from Group D. It was 1998 when Scotland last played a major tournament match. They take on the Czech Republic at Hampden Park. Alex O'Henley is UEFA's Scotland reporter. He's in Glasgow now. Hello, Alex.
How are you doing, guys?
Great to get you on the show ahead of a massive day for Scotland. First of all, the excitement ahead of that game at Hampden. What is the feeling right now as Scotland return to a major finals?
Oh, you can almost reach out and touch it. It's palpable. It's been so long, and the Scottish fans had almost given up on the team ever getting back to a major finals again. And now we've got a big debate in Scotland. Should the schools just close for the afternoon? The kids must be able to see the game.
I saw this. What is happening?
A lot of the schools are going to do that.
Wow.
I remember this as a kid myself. I remember when Scotland had big games. Teachers would just do it off their own back. They would say, okay, we're just going to watch the game. But this is different. This is actually a serious campaign that is designed for all the schools effectively to shut down from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock tomorrow, which I'm sure they will.
That is absolutely
fantastic. I don't think the kids will mind, will they?
No, the kids... Also, right, the teachers think, I want to watch it as well. Yeah. I don't want to be teaching. So France 1998 does seem an awfully long time ago. You've been around the camp, you've spoken to the players. Are they embracing that pressure? Is there anything that they might be worried about, that there is so much on this game tomorrow and indeed on Scotland's three group matches?
Obviously, all aware that it's been a long time, 23 years since Scotland were last in the major finals. But when you look at the age of that team, they're all very young. A lot of them weren't even born when Scotland were last in a major final, the likes of Billy Gilmour, McTominay, these kind of guys. So I don't know if they feel the pressure as much as some of the older players. They're going in there with a clean slate. They're very confident. They're very motivated. I think getting to the finals was like breaking through a glass ceiling for them in Belgrade. And ever since then, you just feel being close to them, the confidence is getting better. They're absolutely chomping at the bit to get into this game tomorrow. And they think if they can get a win, it's going to set them on course for qualifying for the first time. And that would be something major if they were to do that. But first of all, first target is to get through the first game and hopefully get 3 points.
Alex, it really seems like Andy Robertson as captain has embraced that leadership role even more going into this tournament. First of all, we all saw the goodie packs that he gave to all the other players with shortbread and all these kind of things, which seemed like a great touch.
£900 a pop for each of those, but I guess with the salary he's on, it can maybe afford it.
I think he's done all right, old Andy Robertson. But also, it isn't just these kind of touches within the squad. I know you've been speaking to him today, and he's been speaking at great length and with great depth about what happened with Christian Eriksen.
Yeah, as a captain, I think he felt that maybe more keenly than others. And he spoke in particular about Simon Kjær, the Danish captain, and how he stood up for the team, protected his partner, protected the player. They all formed a circle around him. He was basically saying he is the example of what all good captains should be. So very effusive in his praise, very generous in his praise. He went on at length at the beginning of the press conference, and obviously at the end we recorded our own message for UEFA purposes, and he was excellent in that as well. But Andy Robertson is a great leader, there's no doubt about that, and he's matured so much. It's funny, we were actually reminiscing about where it all started for Andy. As he was saying, it's not that long ago actually that he was playing in front of 300 people for Queen's Park at Hampden. And now tomorrow he's going to take his country over that white line for the first time in 23 years, the first captain since Colin Henry in 1998. And he's embracing it. He can't wait. He's just hoping he gets a good night's sleep tonight.
Alex, I know you're going to be a professional, but good luck to you and Scotland at tomorrow's game. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Enjoy the games, lads.
Alex O'Henley, our Scotland reporter for this competition. Really excited to see their return to the competition. OK, to see out the show with myself, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott and Lindsay Hooper, we're going to pick out our standout game from Monday's fixtures. Lindsay, would you like to go first? Which one are you most looking forward to?
I am going to stick with Scotland against Czech Republic, and it's because I can't call it at all. Czechs, they like that attacking style. They've got high press, but they can also be vulnerable in defence. And with a third Euro tournament for Darida as well, one of only four players with prior experience at a major tournament, I think there's something here for the Scots to maybe get at. They've got tall forwards, maybe winning the first ball in the box could be key here for getting a breakthrough. I really can't call it. I think it'll be a bit of a chess match.
I'm really looking forward to Spain-Sweden, the third and final match. Can't wait to see exactly what shape Spain are in. In my head, I've sort of thought for a few months, I've thought of England and Portugal and France and maybe Germany and now Italy. If Spain can come up with a performance, they are right up there in terms of the favourites to go a long, long way in this competition. And Aymeric Laporte potentially playing at the back only adds to their strength in depth, Rob. So that one for me, for you.
I'll go for the other game because I'm such a big fan of Robert Lewandowski. I can't wait to see him at the tournament. We heard it there. He hasn't always had the best tournaments when he actually gets to them. But the fact he's broken this Bundesliga record for the most goals scored by a player in a single season, 41 goals he scored, and he didn't even play all 34. I cannot wait to see him at this tournament. And I think in this group, I think he'll get goals, even though, you know, clearly Graham persuaded you Spain are stronger than perhaps we originally thought.
He did.
But I'm really excited to see what Robert Lewandowski can do in this competition, even without Piontek, even without Milik alongside him for that game in St. Petersburg. So, brief reminder, Scotland, Czech Republic, Poland, Slovakia, Spain against Sweden. Lindsay Hooper, thank you very much for joining us on our coverage this evening.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Chris.
It has been another brilliant day. That is all for now. A reminder, you can listen to us live every match day on the Euro Show, which is available just after the day's final game on the app and on the website, euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the official Euro 2020 podcast using your favourite provider.
Yeah, we'll always react to the big stories of the day and look ahead to the next set of fixtures. Plus, you'll hear from all of the players involved in the biggest moments.
Big wins for England, for Austria and the Netherlands. Euro 2020 is in full swing. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.